Well, welcome to another episode of Fair Game, the podcast. Hi, Mikey.
Hi, Lily.
Hey, so today, so cute. So today we're going to be talking about the vow, which, Mike, you told me episode one, you need to watch the show.
Right.
Everyone, it's on HBO. You can also catch it on HBO Max, but there's a new episode every Sunday. There's 9 episodes so far, and I hope there's going to be more. But it's truly riveting. It's heartbreaking. It's all the things that surround a cult. And we're talking about Nexium.
And today we have a very special guest, the whistleblower who was at the center of that vow series, Mark Vicente. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Mark, we are so happy to have you, and thank you for the work that you are doing. It's not easy. It's not something to come out from, and the healing process of coming out of something like this is just kind of never ending, honestly. And I'm sure you're going through that.
It's yes. true. But I mean, I'm very excited to talk to you guys because we're huge fans. I mean, you guys, Mike and I spoke about this before. You guys don't even understand how much you helped us.
Well,
with your show.
Thank you. And I wanted to hear about that. I wanted to hear how you and Mike connected up. How did that happen?
So Mike actually reached out to me on Twitter. And I think he even started with, I know you probably won't even see this, blah, blah, blah. And usually I don't look at all the message requests. For some reason, I just that day looked. Yeah. And I saw it was Mike. So I immediately reached out. And we had this fantastic conversation. And the thing that I shared with Mike is that what, you know, Scientology in the aftermath did for us was extraordinary. And also, you know, going clear. Because as we were starting to wake up, you know, and I can go into this more, we were making this resource list of what you need to read, you know, what videos you need to go look at, and what, you know, movies and shows you need to go look at.
Right.
And on our list was, you know, was Going Clear, and of course, Scientology in the aftermath. And I told Mike that for me personally, seeing his journey and seeing a guy, you know, who'd gone through this, who was very high up in the organization and who turned and began exposing everything was very meaningful. And there were times when I know for myself, I sat there and thought, okay, I need strength right now. And then I'd sort of think of like Mike, okay, so Mike went through this, he went through that, and like he's speaking up, I need to do that, you know, sort of like channeling Mike. So it was extraordinary what the show, you know, what your guys' show did for us and for, I mean, literally hundreds of people that were trying to piece together, like, what the hell were we in? And then watching your show, looking at sort of the pattern of Scientology, and then going, oh, wait, that's like our pattern, you know? Right. Like, oh,
yes.
Auditing, well, we had that as well, you know?
And right.
Constant confession, oh, we had that as well.
Sure.
You know, and never question the leader. And, you know, if you question the leader, you're screwed, you know, all the same. But it was very important to us. 2017 was of course hell. And that's what you're seeing in currently in the vow. You're seeing 2017.
Sure.
And your show gave us enormous strength.
Thank you. I mean, that means a lot to us. And I'm sure you maybe go through this, a similar thing that we go through in X's of cults and abusive relationships, come out thinking you're the only one, right? And it's funny when you will, like, when you come out of the world, there's a sense of, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but I always talk to my therapist about this. I go, there's just a sense of narcissism that comes with your own cult, right? You're like, but I, you know, this is a special thing. Like, I have a special thing, right? Which is the reason why you get into cult is how they get you, right? That you're special, you're part of the elite, you get it. You're part of the 0.01% of the world's population that is willing to do anything about it and give this up and give that up, right? And so you feel there's a sense of, I don't know, there's something about it that makes you very narcissistic. I mean, you leave, you have this huge alternate ego, right? That you're all powerful and better than the rest of the world. Coming down from that is not easy. right? Coming, like, I'm just a person, right? And so, because when you're in that little bubble, you're like, I'm mighty. I'm the only one doing shit about shit in the world. And you all are fucking losers. And that's truly what we all believed. And it's hard when you come out of that. It's a huge fall from grace. But you also don't have that special thing when you start to find out, huh, there's cults like Nexium. There's cults like this Est or whatever it is, you know, like there's other cults and you're like, oh, I'm not the only one. And we, and we are having the similar experience that you're having with your show, with your program, where we're watching it. Ex-Scientologists are watching and going, oh my God, we weren't the only ones. And the, there's so many parallels. I mean, he even used similar words and technology. I wonder if he studied Scientology. But before we move forward, should we give a little context to the show?
Yeah, I think so. And particularly, Mark, as I told you, I thought episode one was absolutely brilliant in describing how people get involved in Nexium. And
that, yes.
I wish that we had had the same sort of footage that you had, for one thing, but also that establishment of why do people get involved. I know when I was watching episode one, Christy and I were sitting there and we were watching the Twitter and people were going, okay, where do I sign up? Where do I sign up? What's wrong with this? This sounds great. This is terrific. And I think that people have this horrible misconception that everybody who is involved in a in an organization like Nexium or Scientology is a dimwit, is emotionally traumatized and incapable of making informed and sensible decisions. And people like point at the TV screen and go, no, that would never be me. And you manage to portray that in a very, very real way to make it clear that, in fact, Leah and I have commented quite often, the people who are involved in Scientology, I'll stick to our subject, you stick to yours. The people who are involved in Scientology generally are well-meaning, good people who have the idea that they are going to help every man, woman, and child on earth. They're not bums on the street. They're not people who are hopelessly lost. Some are, but they're coming into Scientology to solve that problem. And that's what I think you've accomplished. And I'd like you to talk a bit about that because it's so significant to me.
Right. Well, just starting the last thing you said, I mean, we were asked to go and recruit the brightest and the best and the smartest and the most amazing. We weren't tasked to go recruit, you know, losers, recruit the unstable, the desperate, you know, that's not what our task was.
No, I mean, and especially because nobody really is helping anybody. You see, Scientology is like, bring us your best to help us promote ourselves and to continue to be a successful business for profit. But don't, please don't send us anybody who really needs help because we don't know how to help them. And we don't know how to help them. Sorry, go ahead.
It's so true.
Sorry, Mark.
No. So what happened was that, you know, as this project was going along, one of the things we kept talking about, especially when the media, the storm started, and the storm, you know, started really October 2017 with the New York Times. Everything was sex cult. Sex cult, sex cult, sex cult, sex cult. And what we all understood, you know, both the filmmaking team and us as subjects, is that the thing that we had to do is figure out, how do we have people understand it's like a funnel? I mean, this thing called DOS, you know, the slavery thing, that was decades in the making. It didn't start there. You know, nobody goes, you know, joins and says, yeah, I want to join a sex cult. You join something that you think is extraordinary. You guys, it's the same with you guys, I'm sure. So in order to have people understand what that's like, it's not just a bunch of dimwits. Like, how did you not know? Well, you didn't know because that stuff wasn't apparent at all.
Correct.
Right. It's like a spy organization. It's so compartmentalized.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, it's like being in intelligence. You don't know like half the stuff, less than half the stuff that's going on, because the leader keeps everybody triangulated against everybody and compartmentalized. So what we discussed is, and this was really brilliant on the part of Jahan and Kareem, our directors, is like, we have to give the audience an opportunity to fall in love with the dream that you right. fell in love with. And although it's a little bit different for every person, there's this dream. And we have to get the audience to feel like, oh, this seems plausible. I probably would like this. And then after a good hour, like 55 minutes, you know, you get the little cliffhanger, like, oh, this shit's not good.
Right.
But
right.
if you don't do that, what happens is, and I'm sure you guys have had this, and I know we're receiving it even today, the question of, what were you thinking?
Right.
How stupid
yes.
are you?
Every day get this.
I get like the trolls saying, you knew all along. No, I didn't.
Well, good for you, Mark. You know, this comes from our own family and friends who say this. So the fact that you at least have trolls doing that, but could you imagine friends you've known all your life? What an idiot, Leah. You are a complete asshole. I don't get it. You seem so smart, but obviously not. And Mike gets the same thing. And these are not from strangers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I do have some of that from some of my friends from a long time ago.
Yes.
And it's hard.
I know.
It's hard. You know, they say like, what were you thinking? Like, I thought you were a smart guy.
Right. Well, let's talk about that for a minute, Mark, because for some of you who haven't seen The Vow on HBO, you really need to see it. But can we talk about that? What is NXIVM? How did you get involved? Why did you get involved?
Yeah.
Let's just give it some backstory here.
I mean, NXIVM, you know, I knew it as executive success programs. NXIVM is like the big company, but you know, ESP, executive success programs, was this thing that I was invited to after the release of the film, What the Bleep Do We Know? Like, tons of people reached out to me and said like, oh, love your movie. And like, you know, I want to tell you about what we're doing. And I pretty much ignored everybody.
Right.
But in this case, this is around 2005. I got a letter from a woman called Barbara Boucher, mm-hmm. who invited me to this symposium with a bunch of scientists. And she mentioned Fritjof Capra, you know, being a complete geek. I was like, okay, that sounds cool. And I met with her and with the CEO, Nancy Salzman, the CEO of Executive Success Programs.
Right.
I thought they were brilliant. They were very, very smart. They also knew a lot about me. Hmm. Now, 12 years later, I learned the reason they knew a lot about me is because they researched the hell out of me.
Right.
They had meetings discussing what I wanted. They watched every interview I'd ever done, everything I'd ever written, to sort of do a profile on me to figure out what does he want? How are we going to get him? But I didn't know that until 12
years
later.
In Scientology, we call that finding their buttons, right? Finding what person, yes, and what their ruin is in life. What's your way in, you know? So if it was your wanting to be this kind of director, that kind of director, you know, you would go in on that. You know, we'd go in and going, you know, Mark, you should be, you're so brilliant. You should be right up there with Spielberg's of the world. So, you know, we want to get in there. We want to find out who's pulling you down, who's not allowing you to bloom to your full potential, and start you thinking that it's the people around you, that we have the answers for you to get to where you ultimately want to be. So same thing. So go ahead. So they found my
buttons, as you say. You know, I spent some time with them, and then they eventually, you know, invited me to come and take an intensive, and it was weird at first. I mean, Sarah says that in the vow. It was weird.
Sure.
It was just odd. But listen, I've done a lot of odd things in my life. I'm like, whatever.
Right.
And, you know, around day four, this process, this what's they call this EM process, you know, which basically creates a peak experience where you have this huge aha about something. It's hypnosis. It's hypnosis. Sure. It's NLP. It's probably a bit of this, a bit of that.
Yes.
And there's this like big aha I had. And I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. This is really, really good. And it's really, really fast.
Sure.
And what they did with me that was so interesting is they said to me, like, what kinds of movies you want to make? And I said, movies that change the world, you know, like, and I want compassion and I want empathy and I want all these things. Yeah. And they said, that's great. But you know what? You're not an example of that. And in order to create the art you want to create, you're going to have to be the person capable of creating that. And then they spend a significant amount of time showing me how I was not that.
Right.
To the point that you're thoroughly depressed about, shit, I am so, can I swear?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. I am so fucking far from who I should be.
Yes, yes.
In order to make the kind of art I want to make.
Sure.
I'm screwed.
Yes.
And that's exactly where they want you. Because then they have all the answers.
Yes.
They have this and they have that and then the other. And then they, you know, they talked about, you know, your deficiencies.
Sure.
You know, this great, this emptiness inside you and how you keep on looking in the external world to fill it. And, you know, talking about nothing, this was their favorite saying, nothing in the external world can ever bring you joy. Happiness, maybe, like ice cream, feels good, but that's not joy. The only way you can experience joy is to work on all your attachments to everything external. And then finally, you will be unified slash clear, whatever the words are. It's this, it's some word. It's the same in every single organization.
Sure.
And of course, my goal was I want to make, you know, I want to be a better filmmaker. I want to make extraordinary things. And so, you know, eventually I got caught up in, well, I'm going to work on myself.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to take like a year. That's all I was, a year to work on myself. And as you know, 1 year turns into 2 years and then you're moving higher and higher in the organization. You have more people that you're responsible for and more people that you care for and you should care for.
Sure.
But the way it presented itself on the outside was sort of like this, you know, almost like this business program with these very sort of deep things that they were teaching you. And many people would come in and say, I thought this was a business course. And I say, well, it is a business course, but businesses are made up of people.
Right.
So what we work on is people. We work on the human behavior equation that is clearly screwed up because look at the world.
Right.
You know, so that was sort of my entry. And then of course there was, you know, all the same tactics that I now understand exist in so many different organizations. And you're right. I really thought that this was quite unique.
Yeah.
Until I began reading and look, listen, my wife saved my life.
Yeah.
My wife, she's a rock star. She woke up and she began making a list of things that she was trying to get me to look at, reading articles that didn't have the word cult in them.
Right. Reading That's so articles, important.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yes. You have to be so careful how you approach, because people, I'm sure, ask you, Mark, and they will continue to ask you. They ask us, how do I get my family member? And even though you want to say you're in a fucking cult, Google it. Just Google it for yourself. What are the signs of a cult? It's right there. I mean, it has not, it's not from me. It's not, it's from a legit place. You have to be so careful. So because the word cult didn't appear, at one point you were willing to look at it, Mark?
Yeah, so basically there was an article that Bonnie put in front of my nose, and it said high control group. I was like, a high control group. Okay, let me read that.
Yes.
But by the time I get through the list of what a high control group is, I'm like, holy shit.
Right.
At the bottom of the page, the word cult comes in. But now I'm a little bit ready because like this shit is really accurate. This is everything I've been complaining about in the organization I'm reading. And then what she did was she gave me articles on spiritual narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll tell you, the very last conversation I ever had with Keith Raniere, she gave me an article, something about the 20 things that spiritual narcissists do.
Yeah.
Read the article. She said, okay, now call him. And I called him. And in my mind, I ticked off at least half of the things he was doing.
Right.
And when I hung up, I said, he did so many of those things. And she just smiled and she was beaming.
Yeah.
But then I think the thing that really shook me was there were a couple of things. Going Clear shook me. Holy hell, Will Allen's film. Mm-hmm. Shook me. Scientology in the Aftermath, really, like that's when it began to concretize for me, because I saw all these people that were describing the same kind of thing. There was this damage that the people in your show were describing.
Yes.
This sort of spiritual rape, so to speak. And that was the thing I was like, oh, so it's not just me that's feeling this. Because I collapsed. When I finally realized that this guy was a flat out liar, it's like everything turned inside out and upside down. I talk about sometimes, like, you know, in Stranger Things, the TV show, like they're in the upside down. I was in the upside down thinking that was the right way up.
Yes.
And suddenly I woke up and I flipped and I was thinking, oh my God, everything is opposite of what I thought. Right. And it's a terrifying, terrifying experience to your psyche. And I mean, honestly, and I think I mentioned this in the vow, I was completely suicidal.
Yeah.
because I couldn't, there was a bunch of things I couldn't reconcile. And I don't know if you guys went through this really, but like for me, he had, Ranieri had put himself in my psyche so much that I thought my goodness and his goodness were the same.
Right.
Like I didn't understand that I was dealing with a hollow, empty shell.
Sure.
Because he was so good at what he did. And so for me to doubt him meant I had to doubt me.
Right.
And everything about me was always like, goodness is the most important thing. It's, you know, so now I'm doubting him, but I'm doubting my own goodness. And that was that was this terrible, terrible thing. And it was incredible because my wife, Bonnie, knew that's what was going to happen.
Right.
And she was like right there giving me every single, you know, piece of, you know, video or reading or, you know, getting me to counselors to help me understand what was going on, because that waking up was so interesting. And the other thing I remember is that it was like I woke up from a fog. I talk about, you know, the upside down going right side up, but like I came out of a fog and I remembered suddenly when I went into the fog. And I remembered, and it was around late 2005 when they told me during these intensives that I was fighting, that I was analyzing everything, that I was questioning everything. And the problem was I wasn't giving the education the chance it needed to work in my life. When they said, you're going to get nowhere. You argue about everything. You are constantly fighting.
Yeah.
And what you need to do, if you really want to understand what this model does, you need to just try it out. And I remember walking to the door of the room and saying, okay, let me just let go of all that shit that I've used my whole life to protect myself. And it was like I took my armor off and I fell into a fog.
Yes. You literally surrender the part of you that is the fighter, right? It gets put on pause. What we need, you know, to critical thinking to, you know, but they, cults like this, they alter this behavior as being opposing, not wanting to release yourself to it. There's something blocking you. This is your other brain that's trying to destroy you and keeping you from yourself and ultimately helping others. And like you guys said very smartly, you know, you go into this as a good person, right? You go into this as a seeker. You go into this wanting to be more than just an average human being who doesn't self-reflect or is in fact, like, you know, these are the people that get into these things who want to be more than what they are. They want to be cause over their life and cause over their feelings. And everything that happens to you is you don't want to be a victim. God forbid you're a victim. And all these things are good qualities in a person. Unfortunately, they're also the things that people prey upon. But I tell people, listen, you know, and Mike and I have to remind this, that piece of you was always there, right? Mm-hmm. That is what gave you the ability to leave, to start looking at what Bonnie was showing you, right? To finally start looking. That piece was there. It was just pushed down, right?
Exactly.
The things they're talking about is not any of that. It was pushing down the fighter in you.
The other thing I wanted to say about this is I think that a part of the technique that gets employed is to redirect your proclivity to question, fight, or whatever outside. You become a part of an us versus them world. And the us is all good. The them is all bad. In Scientology, the them is basically everybody that isn't in Scientology, but most particularly, it's the psychiatrists, the media, the FBI, these organizations that are out there that you are supposed to fight against. Right. And you're supposed to support the organization that you're part of and fight to the death to eradicate the things that are outside. And I'm wondering whether you had a similar thing in NXIVM or DOS or whatever you call it, the organization.
Yeah. There was this constant programming, so to speak, of like, we are the most humanitarian organization that exists. Yeah. You know, we,
no, we were, Mark. That's tech. A lie. Scientology is.
We have the tech, you know. I know, it's insane, right?
No, we have the tech, Mark.
We have the tech. And I remember so that later on, I remember thinking, but I don't think that's true. but I'm not sure that's true, because there's a lot of people that are more humanitarian than you fuckers, because right? Like, I was fighting with a lot of people. But yes, what happened, you know, Mike, I'm glad you said that. What happened is that they spent so much time disabling your gut instinct. Mm-hmm. You know, they mm-hmm. would talk about, and I don't know how it's termed in, you know, in Scientology terms, but they would talk about how, you know, there's your intellect, and then there's all these emotional reactions you're having, all these visceral reactions. And that's just the animal, you know? Yes. And that's why you get nowhere. You get you derail yourself all the time, because correct. You're so busy reacting to this, that, and the other. Right. So we need to get you to sort of, you know, ride that horse properly. And sure. So what that means is every reaction that you're having, it is suggested that the fact that you're having this reaction means that you're vested in some way.
Yeah.
Which means you're disintegrated. Disintegrated means that you're not congruent with reality.
Right.
There's something stuck in you. And so what you need to do is remove these disintegrations until, in essence, you become completely flat.
Yes.
Without reaction. And
right.
That was the thing that I remember struggling with, because I was thinking, yeah, but what about passion? And I will tell you that over the years, it did happen to me. A lot of the stuff that I was upset about began slowly fading.
Yes.
And I think, and that was scary as shit, because
yes,
it only sort of erupted back. When I saw the way that they were treating Bonnie,
yeah,
I started getting really, really irked and really, really angry.
Yes.
But I think the thing that really pushed me over the edge in terms of like being disgusted at them was when Sarah and I had the conversation and I realized what they did to her.
Right.
Because now I saw, oh, that's where this leads. Holy shit. And then my rage just came out. And it's interesting, because it's almost, I could almost say it's 12 years of bottled up rage.
Yeah.
Of like, you assholes.
Yeah.
That's what you've been doing. And I was so, I was so angry, because honestly, I remember thinking to myself, man, if I came in 2005, if you guys just told me what was really going on, I would walk right out that door.
Right.
But you assholes kept it quiet, and you knew what was going on all this time, you know? But the rage, funnily enough, I began to get in touch again with all these feelings and all these natural responses that I was having, and understood that anger is really, really good. Now, what's interesting is the loyalists, you know, who think that we're all full suppressives and Luciferians.
Yes.
You know, there's probably, I don't know, 50 or 60 of them. Mm-hmm. They really spend a lot of time talking about how we're having all these reactions. And I imagine they're watching The Vow saying, well, they're vested emotionally in this. Of course I'm vested, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Of course I am.
Right, right.
Excuse me. Excuse my language. But you know,
no, it's quite all right.
I am vested, but they did ship it away. They were effective, not effective enough.
Yeah.
But they were effective, because I found that when I woke up, I had this clear recognition. Oh, I have to rebuild things that I don't even know where they are. They feel lost, but all the counselors would say to me, they're not lost. They're just buried. It's like what you were saying. They're just buried in there somewhere, and you have to find a way to let them out again.
Right. And you know, the thing is, like, now doing a real, like, I'm in real therapy, real, you know, reading real books for the first time. Because you read hundreds of books in Scientology, you're forced to read, you know, mandatory books, and it's self-brainwashing, because you're not only reading it 2.5 hours a day minimum, Scientology, but you're looking up words, you're like, so the self, it really gets in there, and it's hard to extract your thinking. But being in as a child and only having an eighth grade education, I didn't have other data. Other than the data that was taught to me throughout my life. And that's, most Scientologists are born into it and raised in it and all that. Mm-hmm. And Scientology becomes your primary caretaker as a parent. So even though you're being abused and you're learning to receive abuse, but also to be an abuser, because that's what Scientology is behind the scenes, it takes time to, right? So things you would be working on, let's say as an adolescent, you're going through just general adolescence, you're going into Scientology and being treated and talked to as an adult. So you learn like you were talking about, to push down your real thoughts, your real feelings. If you're depressed, you never say that because you'll be punished for that. You're being raised by other teenagers who are employees of Scientology, who are also raised in this kind of Nazi young, you know, Nazi youth type, right, Mike? I mean, I don't know how better to explain Sea Org members in Scientology and how they, treat human emotion is not good, right? Mm-hmm. But what's funny is the human emotion that's exerted mostly in Scientology is anger. I mean, you are just constantly being yelled at, constantly being penalized, constantly being made responsible for things that happen to you from this life or a former life. I don't know if you guys are into that.
Not publicly, but privately.
Right, exactly. And so coming out, I found myself spending time with my therapist going, yeah, but, right? Saying, but then how come I was like, I went from this to this then, or how come I, like when I help somebody, I saw them change. So how is that happening? How is this happening? And why does this lie detector work? How is it working? And, you know, yeah, but this, yeah, but that, yeah, but this. And it took her so much time. And I said, just send me data. I don't want to talk through it. I need to see the real data. And she'd send me books. She'd say, read this, or here's an article in Psychology Today or whatever, you know? And so I was like, oh, that's how the E-meter worked. Oh, that's how that person was helped. That's nothing but the placebo effect, or, you know what I mean? Like things that you just can't explain. And I think that's part of the problem, because you brainwash yourself into believing that they had the solution,
right?
When you could have done this in a session with a therapist, right?
Right,
you know, or read an article, or yeah, go ahead.
And that, by the way, I think is one of the things that I really remember really admiring in 2017 when I was looking at you guys, because, and 2018, because I realized, oh, you guys started a battle, but you were still, to use a computer term, still defragging your own mind.
Yes, still.
While in the battle. And that's sure. What we were struggling with is we were in a battle to hold these people accountable and, you know, put them in prison while completely screwed up. And
sure.
I think when I looked at you guys, I was like, okay, so if they can do it, maybe we can do it, you know? So you don't understand how much, without your knowledge perhaps, how much you did for us. And I believe have done for a lot of people, because I now know it's not just our organization, the people that woke up and looked at what you guys did, but it's a lot of people, because I think we're having the experience. And I believe, and maybe I'm wrong, but I believe that, you know, if enough parents who have power are able to move things politically, I think it will crumble. I honestly believe that eventually these kinds of organizations, they don't last forever. Eventually. I have so much respect though for how long the battle has been for you guys, and I don't know what the way is. And the only response, I guess, is to be consistent in, you know, what was the thing Barry Meyer said, sunlight is the best disinfectant.
Yes.
That I think in episode 5. Yeah. It's the best disinfectant, but it has to be applied again and again and again and again. And I mean, certainly what I've seen from you guys over the years that I've been watching is you guys are just, you're relentless. And well, it can't be easy.
No, it isn't, because it's a small group, Mark. We're small but mighty. And we never, listen, there were people before us that took on the fight. They got to a certain point, and then at a certain point, they feel they're not getting anywhere. They give up. Then somebody else picks up the torch has passed. So there was many people before us, and hopefully there'll be many people after us, but we have never really, and I tell this to anybody who, you know, calls me an asshole. I always use this as an excuse. I go, you know, I'm still in the fight. You know, I'm still in the fight. So I actually have never left this toxic world of Scientology. Just so you know, I haven't actually left. Can I get a fucking break?
Yes. Yes.
Only when it gets me out of an argument or having to evade a responsibility for my horrible attitude. Yes, go ahead, Mark.
That's something as well. Like, it's so interesting to me. Like, the people that are not really doing much to fight are just keep picking at the people that are.
Yes.
Like, I can't tell you how many. It's not. Look, it's not a lot. But there's people that go like, "Well, you were in that thing." I said, "Yes." Why don't you not fight me and fight the assholes that are still doing it?
Put your attention there. Well, what's the saying, Mark? There's a saying that says, "Those who do, those who don't criticize." And everybody has a fucking note. And I always tell people, if you can do it better than me and Mike, please fucking do.
Exactly.
I'd love to go off somewhere, get fatter than I already am, and disappear. Believe me. Mike has two young boys at home. Soccer things to do. Boy shit to do. Feel free. Yeah, and that's honestly, it's heartbreaking because you're like, can you join in on the fight? Love all that passion. You're directing at me. Direct it at the right people. And these are people who are ex-Scientologists who are criticizing me and Mike. And it gets insane. But, you know, you're still in this toxic world. But I know people want to know, for people who haven't seen The Vow yet, and I don't want you to give too much away because I want people to watch it from beginning to end as we're going to. But you were talking about how Bonnie started to show you these articles and you started to talk to Keith and, you know, you had an awakening. How long do you think, because for me, it took you 6 years. It took 6 years, right? It wasn't like, and people always ask me that, what was the thing? But what was the thing, Leah? It wasn't just one thing. As a matter of fact, the thing that actually made me leave, it wasn't that extraordinary in comparison to what had happened prior that I should have left. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But what was it, Mark? How long did it take from you seeing these things that Bonnie was showing you to actually saying, not only are we leaving, but now we're taking action? Because you could have just walked away. All of you could have just walked away. Yeah.
And that was the thought, by the way.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Look, December 2015, I'd hit a point. I was like, this organization is so fucked up. I'm going to write them along. I was going to write my Jerry Maguire letter.
Right.
Of how everything needs to change, you know? I wrote this long letter.
Tom Cruise is a Scientologist, just so you know, Mark. I don't know if I appreciate that reference.
Sorry. Sorry, you're right. But let's think of the story. Okay. I was going to write that kind of letter. I was going to write this letter that was going to make everybody go like, oh, yeah, he's got some good points. And I wrote these long letters explaining all these problems, explaining that, like, I'm scared to even write this because I don't want to become the problem in the organization. They go, why would you be scared? And I didn't even have the awareness to say, because you go after people. And it's funny because that itself was buried as well. So,
yes.
2015, I'm having problems with the organization. 2016, I'm having problems. But the problem is, I'm going to Ranieri to run all the problems by him.
Right. You're basically pleading with your guru, with your master, going, give me a reason to stay. Say something real. Like in the, isn't that from the movie, The Master?
I haven't seen it.
What was that movie with that was the guy was playing L. Ron Hubbard?
The Master.
The Master,
Seymour Hoffman.
Where he's like, tell me something real.
Yeah.
He's like begging with the L. Ron Hubbard character. Yeah. So, like, don't you think that's what you were doing?
I think what I was doing is going to him and saying, don't you see these problems?
Yes.
Do you not see them? And I kept on because I need to show them. And I remember there was one. In 2016, I remember I had this whole realization, and I went to, like, I suppose you could call it our Sea Org, you know, all the high ranks, you know, all the green and blue and purple, you know, sash people. And I said, I've discovered something. This entire thing is not designed to grow. It's designed to crush people's souls. And every single one of us are participating in this bullshit.
Right.
And what's so interesting is right before I did that, I was with Ranieri saying, I made this discovery. Ranieri says, well, go tell them. So I go and tell them.
Yes. Right.
They're sitting there and they're like, not understanding shit I'm saying. One person does. Ranieri walks into the room and suddenly shifts the whole room back to how everybody's underperforming. And I'm sitting there going like, what is going on? And I remember after the meeting, and I don't say a word, after the meeting, I go to him and say, do you not remember what I did, what I was going to do in this meeting, that I was going to basically call everybody out for, like, crushing everyone's soul? He was like, this meeting? I said, yes, because I just left you telling you what I was about to do.
Right. And he was like, oh, sorry, man.
It was so fascinating. So anyway, so there are all these things that happened. But it never occurred to me that he was the problem. And at one point I said to him, Allison Mack's doing bad shit. She's got a whole bunch of a gaggle of women that are like worshiping her. It's weird. They're all losing weight. Their skin's translucent. They're unhealthy, you know? And he goes, right. Well, blah, 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 blah. It's the woman. It's, they're all socialists. There's an excuse for everything. What happens right. though is Bonnie leaves in 2017 and she starts saying to me, I have deep concerns. And you see in the vow, some of that tussle that yeah. happens in episode yes. two.
Yeah.
But what happens is there comes a point where she says to me, what will it take you to question? And I go, data. And right. she's like, all right.
Yeah.
All right, data. So what data. She does is she gets me on the phone with somebody who basically talks about how Ranieri's been hitting on her and how, you know, he's been trying to Skype with her. And in my mind, I'm going, he's trying to Skype. He never uses Skype. I've tried to Skype with him for years. He told me he can't use Skype. He doesn't have it. He doesn't blah, blah, blah. He's trying yeah. to Skype with her. That was one yeah. thing. Then it's yeah. like he's poking her constantly on Facebook. These are little things. But I get on the phone with him and I start questioning him and stuff. And it occurs to me, this is around April 2017. So she comes out in January. She's pushing me and pushing me and pushing me. In April 2017, it occurs to me for the first time, I think he just lied to me.
Right.
That was the crack. Mm-hmm. Because I'd held him in the sort of, I suppose, the sacred place of like, he's trying his best. You know, he's dealing with like a lot of people that are struggling and this and that and the other, not trying hard enough, whatever, including me. And when I realized there was one lie, I thought to myself, what if there's more?
Right.
And that was the beginning of the unraveling, because then what I began is an earnest investigation, pushing
on
him,
your own,
questioning
right.
him,
yes. yeah.
and
yeah.
realizing this guy is full of shit.
Yeah,
that was the thing that really did it. Is because the way he triangulated everybody against everybody,
yes.
everybody was fighting, and they would go to him to resolve it, and that's the way he set it up.
Right.
But I began pushing on him. And of course, when I began pushing him, people got very nervous.
Of course.
They said, you know, you're not showing him appropriate tribute. You yes. know, I think your pride is getting in the way. But, you know, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the South African in me. I was like, I was on a roll. I was on a yes. roll. There was something was not right.
Listen, once truth is once your eyes are opened, or at least you're starting to look is the beginning of the end. It is probably the quickest deprogramming one can do is yes. what we both said. Data, looking. Once you look, game over.
Yeah.
Just be willing to look. And that's what I tell people. Listen, don't believe what we say. Look. Yeah. Look for yourself, right?
But they've constructed
the bullshit
it.
That they run. Yes, that's evil.
Exactly.
These people, yes, yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's watertight yes. because you can't look at that, because to look at that is to be dishonorable.
Correct.
Right,
it's
or whatever.
It's a sin in Scientology to okay. look on the internet, to watch Going Clear, to read a book, to go on the internet, to look at anything that's, you know, exposing science. This is all a sin that you would have to confess the next day. Remember, you have to go in every day. In Scientology, you are put on a lie detector every day in Scientology. They claim that they could read your thoughts on this meter. And if you do any kind of training, as I have done in Scientology, where I was on the other side of the meter, I've seen it move. So I know that it moves on thought, because anytime I say, what was that thought? What was that thought right there? No, that. And the person says, I masturbated last night. I was okay. All right. So why don't you go ahead and tell me all the details of that, right? This is like an everyday occurrence. And then if you don't give it up, it's, have you read anything anti-Scientology? Have you talked to anybody anti-Scientology? Have you this? Have you that? You are interrogated daily on these things. If you show any of yourself, any questioning is met with, you are doing something bad. That's why you're questioning it. You're That's questioning it because you're doing something we don't know about. Right? It's undisclosed. And you could say that to anybody and make that true, right? You could say that to any, you have an attitude because you've done something bad. You have some undisclosed thought about me that you're not disclosing, or something about yourself or somebody in the organization. And you could always find that. It's right. very 1984. It's thought control. It's all those things. And it's very hard.
They did a lot of the sort of, you know, it sounds like your projection.
Yes.
It sounds like yes. you're vested.
Yes.
You know, and especially yes. when people got really upset, you know, you get gangbanged with a bunch of people, you know, doing yes. pop psychology on you for hours and sure. hours and hours and hours until you submit.
And then when you do say something, you're like, that made it true. I did have something, right? I did yes. have something. I did have a private conversation with my wife 2 weeks ago. And we said, is this some crazy shit we're in or what, baby? Mm-hmm. You know, and you reveal that and they're like, aha, there it is. There it is. That's the reason for all this crazy behavior, Mark. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I guess it's true. I mean, I guess it's. That's
well, yeah. well, there's this incredible thing in Scientology that is like a fundamental concept that if you're accusing someone else of doing something, it's only because you've done that
right.
yourself.
Yes. In this
Literally.
Life or another life. Yeah.
Literally. So if you accuse Keith Raniere of being a liar, it's because you've lied. And the way to resolve it is for you to confess to the lies that you have told, yes. not go and yeah. find out what he's really up to,
right.
but look into yourself. And this is the same thing yes. I've seen now in The Vow and from talking with you and yeah. also with Sarah and Nippy, is mm-hmm. this idea that every criticism or anything that you come up with as, well, wait a minute, there's something not right here.
Yeah.
The not right here is always what's not right with you.
Right.
It's always turned back around and made, this is you, so you're responsible. If there is something bad going on here, it's because of your badness.
And by the way,
Mike. Not because of the organization.
You're absolutely yeah. right. And Mike, it's actually fucking genius.
It is.
It you cannot say that Keith wasn't a genius, that L. Ron Hubbard wasn't a genius, and that they studied and they explored how to completely take over someone's mind
right.
and their lives. And they put it into these cohesive, I call it
codified yeah. gaslighting.
There you go. Perfect.
Perfect.
Perfect. And it's genius. You cannot take this away from them. You can't. Mm-hmm. And this, I mean, all of them are charming. All of them are intelligent. All of them are, you need these things. I mean, I know, Mark, you know that this mm-hmm. is part mm-hmm. of the checklist mm-hmm. of a sadistic leader, right? Yeah. They have to be charming. They're not going to just come out and go, hey, we're here to fuck you and fuck your life. Mm-hmm. Sign up.
Yeah.
That's not what's happening.
It's interesting. What you're saying about the whole, you know, it must be you, it's not them. It's so interesting because yeah. this sort of unified theory of reality
yeah.
was universal except the leader. The leader does not project.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
That's exactly that's right? the same in Scientology.
Same thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Doesn't project because like, what?
And Mark, I was doing that to the two leaders of Scientology, Tom Cruise and his best friend, Dave Miscavige.
Yeah.
I was reporting on David Miscavige and Tom Cruise to some other entity that I thought was bigger than David Miscavige. I didn't know it was going directly to David right. Miscavige's desk.
Right.
I mean,
right.
and I was reporting because I was a purist. I was like, nope, this is what the book says. This is what the book says exactly. And I was that person
wow.
writing reports on people. This person is misapplying policy, blah, 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 HGLPL, 24 June, blah, blah, blah. I'd pull out excerpts from L. Ron Hubbard's writing. This was a violation of violation of that, very by the book. And I thought I was saving the organization, as you
yeah,
were. I thought one day there'd be a big medal for me.
Yeah, because I'm going to fix the stuff that's not working.
I'm going to fix it. I'm going to fix it because there are some things here that are workable, but ultimately it leads to all bad. The beginning is what Mike has mentioned before. It's like boiling the frog, right? You do the little communications courses, things that seem innocuous, things that people could agree with, like, you know, be good to people, be good to your neighbor, you know, like all these things, common sense, moral codes that everybody could agree to. But as you get more and more in, and you lose more and more of yourself, you realize what it's really about.
Right.
Do you
right.
know if Keith studied Scientology at all?
Because so I never saw him do it, but apparently people that left before told me he did.
Right.
Because he did study L. Ron Hubbard's work. He studied a number of different things.
Yeah.
It's interesting because then later I realized, oh, we called it the tech, and the, you know, there's a whole thing about suppressives as well. And like, it's
and,
so
and he
similar.
Even, and he was, by the way, had the balls, had the freaking balls to be insulted, to be compared to Scientology in one of the episodes. He's like, I mean, people are calling like, oh, sorry, Keith. Don't mean to insult you.
Do you know what was interesting? He used to talk about Scientology now and again. Because people would say, oh, this is like Scientology. And it's nothing like Scientology. And they'd say, well, you know, Keith, Vanguard, whatever. Why would you say that? He goes, well, in Scientology, what they do in their process is they close down entry points. They have people literally disassociate, so you can no longer resolve the issue.
Right.
And I remember thinking, oh, that's not good. That's not good. Yeah, that's not good. But then,
and then
I realized,
you're like, that's exactly what we do.
Exactly what we do.
Exactly
what we do. You block off the entry points to the person's true ability to feel and negotiate these normal emotional reactions that they're having that are indications of something that should be looked at.
Right. The other thing I want to ask you about was, did we get an answer to how long it took Mark to actually leave?
I didn't actually, in the end, I just basically said in January, she left. In April, I realized he was lying. And May, I was like, all right, I'm out.
Wow. So pretty, relatively
it was pretty fast.
Short amount of time.
It was pretty
fast. That's what I always tell people. It's the shortest, probably the easiest deprogramming.
But the thing is, though, you have to understand, and I think you do know this, there were so many issues that had built up over time.
Sure.
That were questions that were unresolved, that the lie resolved a lot of things, because the lie made me realize, oh, he's the one orchestrating everything, triangulating everything, and pitting everybody against each other. And then all the other stuff that was a problem suddenly was like, oh, that's why that was a problem.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
So it's like, it's almost like this pressure building of all these unresolved issues, and then one crack and it breaks.
Yes.
Yes.
It's hard to get back from that. It's hard to recover. Thank God. But the real work, you know, that's why I say, like, the you think the hardest part is leaving, and it really isn't. It's the aftermath, right? Which is why we called it the aftermath, because
it's tragic
for a
it's
lot
tragic.
Of us. It the work begins. Like, you know, I wrote a book. It went to number one on a New York Times bestseller, right? And I'm on this like, wow, people care. Who's buying this book? I mean, I never thought what we were talking about at the beginning, that you think people are going to go, you deserve the treatment you got because you got yourself into this crazy ass cult.
Right. Right.
And even if you want to blame your mother for getting you in as a child, you still as an adult had free will, but you don't, because it's a prison of belief, right? As Larry Wright puts in his book, right? So that makes so much. So the work comes later. The recovery comes later. The depression, what I was mentioning about my book, is like after the book and after all of that, you go into this deep, deep, deep depression. Mm-hmm. Right? You get on this kind of high of like, I'm going to tell my story and I'm going to help others to avoid this kind of pain. And then you go to the place that you never thought you'd go. And it's really difficult to dig yourself out without help, without surrounding yourself with people who understand it. Because listen, I went through a few therapists. You know, the first therapist was like, put your hand in the part of the body that feels pain. And I'm like, okay. And if you could just let out a sound, an audible of the sound of what that part of the body's feeling. I'm like, I'm out. Like, I'm thinking about, am I getting my period soon? Fuck, did I turn my curling iron off? Fucking shit. I probably should text Angela.
I can relate.
Yes. And then I went to another therapist who did some other shit, you know, and, you know, you find, and people tend to give up, right? Because it's not easy to tell your story one time, tell a story another time, tell your story to somebody else. And finally I found my person that is helping me.
Right.
Still, I'm digging myself out daily, Mark. Right. I write myself letters every day,
right,
about what I'm feeling.
Right.
Feel useless. Feel like I never did anything for the world. I'm 35 years behind my work. Shit mother, shit daughter, shit. And I write it down and I deal with it later with my therapist, you know. But so relatively short amount of time that it took
me
now.
But the thing that you were saying about the aftermath.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, people don't understand. Like there's almost a psychotic break when you realize you've been lied to and everything's upside down.
Yes.
And you sort of like, and in Bonnie's case, it happened, but I didn't understand what I was seeing. And then it happened to me, which is you just curl into a ball and you just weep.
Right.
But it's not just like a little sniffle.
No.
It's like wailing.
Yes.
Because everything you thought you were doing, you weren't.
Yes. Right.
And it's just,
and that's not just
awful,
a one-time thing. Yes.
Oh no. Oh no. No, it's still with me.
Yes.
And in some ways the challenge for us was, you know, we, Janja Lalić, who, you know, she said to me one day, the problem is you guys started becoming activists before you had a chance to heal. And I was like, yeah, right. Guess what though? We don't have time.
Time for this,
to like,
yes.
Heal. We got like FBI, yes. Department of Justice, blah blah blah. We got to, like,
yes.
We got shit to,
yes.
Do.
Yes.
And she said,
yes.
Yeah, but when you get there, and I hope you do need to, you know. And so what happened is when the verdict came in June 2019, you know, people said to me, "Oh, you must be thrilled." I'm like, no. And yeah. I said, because I just see bodies everywhere. I just a bloodbath.
Yes. Yes.
All these betrayals, you know, all these friends that we've lost, all the damage and everything. And then I went into this deep, deep thing of like, okay, that part of the battle is over and I was lost.
Yes.
And the only thing that helped me in the end was I became obsessed with all these screenplays that I never got around to writing. I just began writing. You know, writing these TV series I wanted to make, writing these screenplays, write this movie, that. We're just starting to write and write and write. And that actually is the only thing really, besides, you know, my amazing, amazing marriage and my wife, is writing my art is the thing that keeps me afloat. Because if I don't do that, there is this bottomless pit that's still there.
Right.
Waiting to swallow me up. Yeah. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes,
right.
I do. Mark, I really do. Just so not to let that moment go. You can edit whatever you want, but I feel you and I get it. And that is why we were searching, right? Because there was that hole there before. Yeah. And then that was put aside and then something else was put there. And we were working on adding more damage to ourselves.
Right, because the thing you filled it with was counterfeit and the hole's worse now.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
But just added on top of already the shit that was,
right.
we were fucked up already, right? We went in fucked up trying to get help. Then they fucked us up even more. Yeah. We fucked ourselves up even more. And then adding to that, we fucked other people up by getting them in. So we add that fucking guilt to it.
Yep.
And it's a never ending story. It's a never ending sea of pain that is available to you at all times.
All times. Anytime you want to look, it's there.
It's there. Yeah. And it's like I said, it's a long road back and you need to, your network has to be very, very small, with people who understand it, who know how to deal with it, who know how to acknowledge it and not say it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
That's over. Get over it. You know,
like, I hate get over it.
No, it's unbearable. It's unbearable, right? But now I'm learning you don't give that side of yourself to everybody.
Hmm.
Not everybody deserves to be in that space with me because they're actually not evolved in a way of dealing with trauma, right? Like trauma work is very specific.
Mm-hmm.
People think about trauma as being molested and raped, and very true. Those are very traumatic episodes. But trauma has many forms. And dealing with trauma, you have to be responsible when somebody says something to you that is a traumatic event
exactly
in their life. Right?
Exactly.
And dealing with this, dealing what you're dealing with, dealing what we're dealing with, the thousands of people who are dealing with leaving these abusive cults and relationships, they have experience and now being re-traumatized every day by either being in the fight, not being in the fight, not dealing with it, not going to therapy, right? And all of those, it just makes it worse and worse and worse. So I implore you, like, if you ever need us off this, here to talk, because I know my husband's tired of hearing from me. My friends are like, we get it, Leah. Like, we get it, right? Like,
but here's the thing, and this is why I appreciated your show so much and what you guys did in watching you, because we didn't feel alone.
Yes.
Because as you know, there's the feeling of aloneness at first is just horrific. And then when I saw what you guys were doing in the show, I was like, they know exactly what this is like. And for me, you know, seeing Mike as a guy, you know, because this was really publicized as these terrible crimes that were done to these women. And it's true. They were terrible.
Yes.
And I felt sometimes like, but I'm also struggling a bit here, you know? And when I saw Mike, I was like, he knows, he knows what I'm feeling. He knows exactly what I'm feeling. He knows what I'm struggling with and he knows how hard it is. And that was this weird comfort.
Yes, it makes total sense. Mm. Because men are held to, you know, you need to act this way and, you know, you're a man, so you can't really be a victim, a grown man, right? Especially big physical guys like you and Mike, right? Like people would say to Mike, almost ridiculing him. Like, are you kidding me? David Miscavige is like, you know, 4'9". Like, if that was me, I'd beat the fuck out of him. You know, I could beat the fuck out of David Miscavige. It has nothing to do with physical. It's you guys were victims. And for somebody like Mike to hear that is very hard for him to swallow even today. And Mike knows I yell at him all the time. I need you to get therapy. I want you to start talking about that you are a victim. Even, and Mike, you know, he said, well, I'm not a victim. Like, he said that to me. I go, but you were a Mike. Mm. But you were a Mike. That doesn't make you bad. Mm. You were a victim. You need to own that, right? And it's very hard for Mike to accept this as a concept. Yeah. Right, Mike?
Yeah, that's true. I understand what Mark is saying, and particularly with respect to his organization, where the entire focus has been on women being branded and becoming sex slaves. But there was so much more and so many more people that were hurt in ways that maybe not physical, but just as damaging mentally and just as damaging emotionally.
Yes.
And that tends to get forgotten or overlooked. And when Mark said that to me, I went, I totally get it. I totally get it. And it's so nice to be, you know, sort of be in the position where you have someone that tells you, you know, your strength gave me strength.
Sure.
Because that is why we do what we do. We are doing this to be able to help people so that the abuses stop and so that people can heal. And when you hear it from someone who now I've come to respect from having watched the show and seen Mark, and, you know, he's a smart, intelligent, accomplished guy. And I go, wow, I was actually able to help him. That's so satisfying. And it's so rewarding to hear that. And it's true. Makes everything worthwhile.
Yes. And just hear this now, the two of you. I know that you are talking about your strength and your strength and your strength. And just hear this from a woman, that your vulnerability is your strength as well. And you don't need to always put up the, you know, yes, I get your pain, buddy. I was there, buddy.
Yeah.
Your strength does come in your being vulnerable and being okay with saying that you were victims, as strong as you are. That is your strength, to be able to say that and be able to heal together in different ways. That it's not always punching each other in the arm.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm not going to give too much away, but I think that as the episodes progress, I think you'll see some of that.
Good. Well, I'd like to see it from Mike.
Yeah, right. The only thing anybody ever comments about the aftermath was, "Oh, I loved it when you cried."
I know, Mike. I'm busting balls. But I just don't want to send a message that your strength means that you are not allowing yourself to break down. That is a huge, huge accomplishment for people who are being told to put that aside to man up and to, you know, as children, you're told that, you know, stop your crying, you're fine. Oh, come on. You're a big boy. All that stuff is just kind of in your DNA. And so that's why I was talking about being, you know, it's very, very, be careful with who you give that to, because it could be met with like, go back in. Don't share that.
Right.
I did want to ask you, Mark, though, about the repercussions of leaving. Is it similar to Scientology? We have a thing called fair game where they discredit. They attempt to discredit and destroy. I mean, they literally have a policy that says utterly destroy the person. Go after what they are.
Yeah.
Seek to protect.
I think it's a little different from what I understand from the way I've heard fair game described, in the sense that most of the, I'm going to say, the minions don't have a concept of that. What they're told is, when a person leaves, they're told, well, it turns out that they did a bunch of criminal things. So we're holding them accountable for these things they did. And everybody nods their head and goes, oh, that's really sad.
And you can't contact the person to go, hey.
No. So you just believe that, okay, so they stole this or they hacked this or they did whatever. And so I knew that was going to happen, which is why in the very beginning of the vow, you know, you see me recording myself saying, you know, I'm doing this because I think the following thing's going to happen. And so many of those things did happen. There were all these efforts to try to discredit us. There were these efforts to try to frame us for a bunch of things. I mean, I had to take many evasive maneuvers, things that are not even discussed in the vow. You know, I had to talk to all kinds of friends about strategy, because it was really interesting. One of the very first counselors I spoke to, and I was in utter shock still, said to me, "Do you have evidence against these people?" And I was like, "Well, yeah." And she just said, "Do you have evidence?" And I said, "Yes, I have evidence." She said, "You're going to need it. They're coming after you." And I was like, "Wait, why is the therapist telling me that?" And she was like,
"Yeah, why was a therapist telling you that?"
Because she was like, "I know this organization. I've spoken to so many people. You need to understand the reality of what's about to happen. Do not delude yourself." And it was such a big wake-up call. And I was like, holy shit, right. I am now the target. And there's all the stuff they do. You know, they do stuff on the internet, whatever, whatever. But the thing that was so scary was this whole thing of what they do is they literally start to build these falsified crimes and then try to get law enforcement to move to arrest you, which had happened, you know, to a number of people. And what the reason they do it, I believe, is because it's a shot over the bow. I say, if you do this, this is what's going to happen to you. So everyone's terrified. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So you know, there was all these cases that they started to build. And at one point, I mean, the thing that really, really, really got me angry was when I found out that they'd had a meeting to discuss, because listen, we had spies in all kinds of places. They had a meeting to discuss the idea that they would like to create these fabricated white collar crimes against Bonnie and myself in LA with the Department of Justice. When I found that out, I was so angry. Yeah. And in my mind, I was this is war. If it wasn't war before, it is now war. Right, and that's the thing that everybody's terrified. And also in the case of Nixium, there was a very powerful contingent in Mexico with enormous power and enormous money. Because some of these kids, their parents were very, very powerful people. I mean, we're talking like billionaires. And that was the thing that was so scary. And I'd been to some of these, you know, these events and, you know, parties in Mexico. I mean, you know, these were very elite parties and there were a bunch of men with machine guns outside protecting everybody. So that was the thing that we were worried about. So it wasn't that it was the sort of, you know, codified thing that, you know, when people leave, you can do whatever you want. You were just told they've done crimes and now we need to hold them accountable. And if everybody said, great, okay, well then great. We'll cooperate in whatever way we can and we'll give whatever evidence is required to, you know, get them put in prison. And then the other thing, of course, you know, which I think is the same, is this whole thing of like of shunning people, you know, where the minute you say something, the minute it's clear that you have problems, they just shun you. They will not talk to you. They will not.
Right.
They will get everybody to try to basically shun you as well. And it's interesting. It's psychologically very, very effective because you feel alone.
Alone. Yes.
Right?
Yes. And these are people that you spent. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the threat of losing family members, you know, children who, if you speak up, you know that your child is going to abandon you and treat you as dead. Right. That is a very, very powerful, powerful controlling mechanism. Scientology uses this practice of disconnection to a T, but it's not unique. You know, NXIVM had it. Jehovah's Witnesses have it. Mormons have it. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's a very, very powerful tool. And put in the hands of a narcissist or a sociopath, it becomes a part of the arsenal that is right at the forefront of every one of these organizations.
Yeah. And the other thing that's so hard as well, because it's kind of like PSYOPs, you know, what they're doing. The other thing that's so hard is that even the people that left, that were, you know, disconnected from us, to this day, many of them won't speak to us still because the disinformation campaign against us was so, so profound.
Right.
That still living inside of them is like, yes, well, you know, Keith Raniere did bad things and there was a bunch of criminal things going on, but we still think these guys are bad.
Right.
And that's the
other thing.
The other thing that I was doing a bunch of research about, maybe you guys know about this. It was brand new to me. There's a woman in professor in Oregon, I think Jennifer Frade, she talks about blindness betrayal. Have you guys heard about that?
No.
No.
Blew me away. She basically talked about how, let's say a woman's, or, you know, let's say a woman's in an abusive relationship and her friend tries to tell her, you need to get out. Instead of her getting upset at the actual person who she should be upset at, she's upset at the person that's trying to help her.
Of course.
And what we found often is that instead of people being upset at Raniere, they were upset at the whistleblowers, because to really take in how they've been betrayed in that way is so much worse than just deciding that we betrayed them.
Sure.
Yes.
That has helped me a little bit to understand why they still refuse to talk to us. But that's an intellectual understanding. I haven't, on a deep level.
Heart.
Yeah.
Heart.
My heart's still broken.
Yes. Of course. You know?
Yeah.
Of course. Yes. And that makes a lot of sense. And it will continue to break.
Yeah.
Until you, honestly, and one day, Mark, the person that you want to call you will call you.
Yeah.
And they'll apologize. And it still leaves you, because it leaves you heartbroken. You don't get that feeling that you think, well, haha, now I finally won. And they finally are admitting that they, that's happened to me. Right. And I don't know. It doesn't give you what you think that moment's going to give you. You're like, right. So, right. But you did that when I needed you the most. You didn't stand by me.
I know.
And it's another... it's another heartbreak, right? Yeah, I get it.
It's weird. Like, I see people, some people have reached out, a few people have reached out. And I almost think to myself, now that because I'm on television, now you reach out? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, and they say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. But the heartbreak is so profound.
Yes.
That I'm like, it's not what I thought it would be. I thought it would be this incredible
moment
reconnection. And we'd all love each other and hug each other and like, wow, we really got lost in this thing, you know? On the opposite side, it's not that. It's just heartbreaking.
It is, because Mark, you connected with them on a level that wasn't genuine at the time that you connected, and that relationship was based on the false Mark.
Yes.
Right. That relationship was based on the false of that person, and so you didn't have a genuine relationship. Your relationship was conditional, and which is all what these relationships are, right? They're conditional based on your beliefs in this one thing. And so when you leave, you grow, right? You're growing through your pain, Mark. We're hopefully all growing through our pain and not being the people, for people like us who were abusive people, we're growing out of that. So I don't have that connection anymore with those people that are now 5-6 years behind me, you know, as far as doing the work of, you know, the work that I needed to do. So I've grown, maybe you haven't yet. Mm. I don't know you as you are now. You don't know me as I am now. And so that's why those things are not connecting and feeling, right? Because you're thinking of the old Mark, right? You're thinking of the guy
who is. You guys are helping again, like, because you've walked the road ahead of us. And so you know some of these things that we're just still grappling with. You're like, oh yeah, we know that one. That's what this one probably could be.
No, I know that one because that's what I'm dealing with.
I'm learning all kinds of stuff.
Well, that's what I said, Mark. You feel free to call me anytime or Mike. Honestly, that's not an empty, like you, I still love to help people.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
Mike and I are always talking to people to try to help them to get to their path, you know, and especially when you're a person who's helping people, we need help.
Right.
Too.
Right. Of course.
Right. To kind of recharge us and let that part out of ourselves.
Of course.
So I wanted to ask you about, cause I don't want to keep you too much longer, baby, but so Keith now is he's in prison.
Yeah. He's an MDC in Brooklyn and his sentencing is the end of next month.
Okay.
He has a whole bunch of very loyal followers.
Still?
Oh, yeah.
So how many people are still in this shit?
They're still in the shit. They are still in the
shit. No.
Oh, no, no. Listen.
What number? Give me some numbers, Mark. Seriously. So people always ask us.
We think it's around anywhere between 40 to 60. I think it's probably around 50 that are very, very loyal.
60 also, people or 60,000?
No, no, no. 60
what are you talking
people?
About?
No, 60 people.
Oh, wow.
No,
okay.
Not thousands.
Okay. Oh,
thousands.
Okay.
And, okay. And they're still, they still believe that this entire thing was a whole made up thing, that it's, you know, the government's corrupt and the FBI is corrupt and that we just, you know, Luciferian, whatever, whatever. They were dancing outside the prison for a while. You know, every night they were dancing outside in prison, and it was on Friday, you know, girls were shaking their asses for, you know, Ranieri and other prisoners. We also now have a belief that we're starting to get information that DOS is still going. This whole, you know, collateral type organization amongst the women is still going. And we also believe now the men are did it as well.
So the collateral thing, just for people who didn't watch it yet, we should just tell them, Mark, you just want to explain that?
Yeah, basically the idea was, you know, apparently still is, that, you know, you make this commitment to something and you put down collateral to show how serious this commitment is, that you won't break your agreement.
Yeah. Right.
And the collateral you're giving, it seems, is like something about yourself. It's maybe a lie about something somebody did, or, you know, you did, or somebody else did. It's maybe the deed to your home. It's this, it's a whole bunch of things. You're basically giving stuff of value or things that will be terribly embarrassing. So in the case of DOS, you know, the women were giving, you know, naked videos, you know, naked pictures, you know, very, very graphic, and confessions to things that they didn't actually do.
Right.
So that was this weird kind of bond, which was always strange to me, because I always thought to myself, you know, I think commitment, if you're going to commit to something, like, wouldn't you do out of love? Like, why would you do it out of fear? But this was the thing that was drummed into everybody.
Of course, yes.
And it's still operating. And it's the only thing that I can really understand is maybe the reason why some of the loyalists just will not give up. They just won't give up. That they're radicalized to a level that's completely scary.
Mark, you know what? Some of them need to stay in.
Maybe you're right.
Honestly,
maybe you're
right. I thought about this and I talked to Mike about this once. I was like, you know, it's a huge game, right? It's a huge game to play. It's a huge mission. It gives you such a sense of purpose, right?
Right.
And for people like Mike who are in the Sea Org, right, who were totally dedicated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365, right? Lived there, worked there, ate there, everything, right? Gave his children to them. They don't interact with the real world. Too well. And neither do Scientologists. I don't care who you are. Like a celebrity Scientologist, you surround yourself with only Scientology and like-minded people. Some of them I think about. My mission was eventually, you know, hopefully, I was like, eventually we'll get them all out. We'll save them all.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, some of these people, I would fear that they would commit suicide because they wouldn't know what to do. They wouldn't know how. So I think some of these people actually need to stay in, Mark.
Yeah.
Because without it, what do they have? You know, in that mindset, right, Mike? Like it's almost like now I've gone the other way where I actually have sympathy and empathy for some of these people going, I don't know how you would exist. I have lucky, blessed. I have my family. I have good friends that were never in Scientology. I have a real therapist. I have the ability to pay for that. I'm blessed. What would they have? They're not actors. They can't go do a TV show. And you know what I mean, Mike? Like I thought about that.
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's a part also of the sort of reawakening when you do leave is you have this realization that for the time that you were involved in Scientology or NXIVM or whatever, you had something that told you what to do at
every minute.
Turn of your life.
How to think,
what's right, what's wrong, and you're suddenly left with nothing. Not like only yourself and your very closest people to offer any guideposts to you as to what you should and shouldn't do. And I do believe, and I agree with you, Leah, there are people who are so broken that to take that away from them will completely break them.
Yeah.
So as long as NXIVM and the 50 people who are left aren't hurting anybody outside of themselves, and they're not able to recruit any new people, and they're not doing any real damage to anything, they're just fucking one another up, let them go. And I feel sort of the same way about Scientology. If people want to continue to be Scientologists, as long as the abuses end and people aren't being victimized, et cetera, and there are some people that have to rely on what L. Ron Hubbard says to make every decision in their life, okay, that's fine. Do it.
Yeah. Well, so what's the work now, Mark? What's the mission now?
For me now, I am still trying to understand what happened. I mean, one of the things I was telling Mike, you know, I decided I'm going to make a few documentaries about, you know, narcissism and coercion and a bunch of things, because not only will it help me, and I've been researching, you know, like a mofo for quite a while, but I really want to be able to like help people see the template of how it works. Because even when they look at like, you know, like maybe The Vow or, you know, maybe Scientology in the Aftermath, they go, well, my thing's different.
Right.
And somehow you can pull it away from all that and say, go, let's look at the pattern. Let's look at the pattern in a relationship, in a family, in a village, in a, you know, whatever.
Religion,
you know, maybe it'll have impact as well. So part of it's that, but then, and where I'm struggling still, and it's interesting that you said this thing you just said, because it hadn't occurred to me. It never occurred to me, maybe they need to stay. Because I'm this constantly like, you know, we got to help. It never occurred to me. But now I'm thinking, maybe that's true. I'd never actually thought that. I think the one of the things I'm realizing, I think all of us are realizing, is like, we're almost, you do kind of get addicted to the war. And you kind of think, okay, we got to get the next person now. We got to help the next person. We got to help the next person. And I'm beginning to understand that it's not really good for me sometimes. Like sometimes I just need to be focusing on my craft, and sometimes I just need to go and like stare at the ocean and like not be thinking about other people, but think about myself, because part of what they did is they eroded our ability to take care of ourselves. Yes. We became like sort of a no thing, even though everything was supposed to be about you. It wasn't.
No, nothing.
And so a lot of it is about recapturing, and people have told me this, you know, recapturing like, oh, when was Mark the most original Mark? When was I me?
Right.
And, you know, I went to like some of these conferences where I met people that were born in, and they talk about the challenge of like, they didn't know anything else. And they said, at least you can go back to sometime, you know, in your 30s, because I've been involved in a few organizations, you know, you can go back and find. Yeah. And so part of what I've been doing is going back to find, well, where's the most me? You know, cantankerous, full of shit, you know, blah, blah, blah.
But, you know,
and that is there. So a lot of it's the internal work, and less now trying to save, you know, quote unquote, because honestly, we've reached the point of like saturation, and maybe you're right. Maybe there is no more getting people out at this point. And it's on a much smaller scale, you know, certainly than what you guys have dealt with.
Mark, I'm not saying that. I think you continue to try and save people, but some people just can't be saved and understand that.
I think
that
you're right.
As, yeah, but I'm not saying give up the fight, right?
Yeah.
And I get it. And I was talking about when you're looking for that connection and it's not there, it's like, great, baby, you laughed and I'm here if you need me and Bonnie's here if you need her. But there's a certain part of you that has to disconnect from then trying to bring them along to this place of, I want this big celebration with you and I'm not getting it. Yeah. So I'm going to stay connected to you, continue to try to have this moment that's never going to happen because you've grown. They haven't yet. Right. Yes. And it's not your job. It's your job to be there for the Mark as much as you can be.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we can't then turn into the monsters that we're fighting where we're their guru now or where they have to want to change. They have to want to see that they weren't working on themselves. They were becoming something else.
Yeah.
And so you could say, here are some resources for you.
Yeah.
Here's this, here's that. But then at a certain point, you have to say, I've done my job.
No, exactly.
You have to, at a certain point, validate what you have done and not think you haven't done enough.
Because, exactly. I think that's what I'm finally starting to get to is, because for me, listen, the trial that we went through, and I was on the stand for almost 2 weeks, that trial was hell.
Yes, of course.
So that was, June 2019, that was over. And only at that point could I begin thinking, okay, well, now I need to start really thinking about healing. But then I just hit this, I was in the abyss.
Yes.
So a lot of it now is doing the healing. And as I said before, like the creativity is helping a lot.
Oh, yeah.
There's all these ideas and things that I always wanted to do that now I'm finally, starting to like get off the ground and move some of these things. And that I love. And I find, strangely enough, I have a better ability to tap in as an artist than I ever had before because I now know what it's like to have hit my rock bottom. Like I know what the bottom looks like.
Right.
I am now capable of feeling things and now able to write in a way I never was able to before. Because honestly, and this is what you talked about at the very beginning, I thought I was above all of that.
Yeah.
They convinced us that, with this tech, we were going to be above all these things. I thought there was a certain feeling of superiority that I didn't have to struggle with the things that I struggled with my whole life. It was gone.
Right.
Only to find out, no, it wasn't. It's waiting for you right there when you come out. It's right there and it's festering.
Right. Yes. But know that you're doing great, right? And people need to know that who are struggling with this type of thing, just struggling with depression, that the word resilient, look it up in the psychological term, right? That you're still standing, that you're still trying, that you're still here, says a lot about you, no matter what you're going through. If it's NXIVM or Scientology, a bad relationship, feeling like shit about yourself, feeling like you're not enough, know that you're resilient in some way.
Yeah.
And,
well, look, I'm also very proud. I'm very proud of the vow because look, it was not an easy choice to just say, let's just vomit our entire life out for the whole world to see.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It was frightening and it's vulnerable.
Yes.
And every week I'm like, oh my God, not this episode. Oh Jesus.
Right. I know, Mark.
And it's, but at the same time, I'm very proud because I think that we, as the small little team, I do believe it's going to help. It's going to help.
It helped. It already has.
Yeah.
And really, we want to applaud all of you for your courage for doing this. Because like you said, it's not easy. And if you haven't seen The Vow, please do on HBO every Sunday as well. If you want to catch up on HBO Max, right? They can catch up on HBO Max.
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
And honestly, Mark, we thank you so much for the work that you guys have done and will continue to do. And you've helped so many. You've helped us. I mean, it's good to know that we weren't and aren't alone. Same with Scientology victims, Jehovah's Witnesses, people who have been in similar cults. And if you are a current member of a cult, NXIVM, Scientology, Scientology's not listening, but maybe NXIVM people are. But, just look. You don't need to believe them. You don't need to believe us, believe people who've left. Just look for yourself. You'll find the answers. Yeah.
In the immortal words of L. Ron Hubbard, look, don't listen.
Well, on that note, Mark, I cannot thank you enough. And to all of you, our hats are off to you. Thank you. Commend you and there for you in any way you need
thank
us.
Thank you. And thank you for paving the way. Thank you for paving the way.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us, because it's important that the message gets out, and you have a message that is really important.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, until next time, everybody. Signing off.